Welcome to Cityscape, a podcast from the Committee for Sydney. Chuck Wolfe is a Seattle-based lawyer and author who also heads the urban planning group Seeing Better Cities. He's been in Australia for a series of talks on how the United States' experience in improving urban environments can apply here in Australia. He spoke with the Chief Executive of the Committee for Sydney, Dr. Tim Williams.
I'm delighted to welcome Chuck Wolfe to Sydney, where you've been before.
Yes, thank you.
But also to you're speaking tonight to the Committee for Sydney. You're very welcome. You're going to speak to, I think, some of the issues in your latest book, which is Seeing the Better City, which I think is a great title in itself, but also it's got a subtitle, which is How to Explore, Observe, and Improve Urban Space. We're for all those things. So tell us a bit about the book.
Thank you, Tim. Again, it's a pleasure to be here and an honor as well. Well, people usually ask about the book title, and they say, better for whom, and all that kind of stuff. But you've asked the better question, to give you a little play on words there, and that is, what does the subtitle mean in terms of, I take it to mean, what does the subtitle mean in terms of practical application?
Yeah, okay.
And the idea behind this book is to help people cope with urban change, both city residents and professionals who are engaged in the business of real estate, built environment, design, and implementation. It's calling for us to speak in more visual language around common urban issues in the hope we can get to perhaps a more inclusive and advanced resolution. Words aren't enough. And so observe, explore, are a tout to the visual sense, and improve means if we use those introductory enticing words, maybe we can get somewhere.
See, it's interesting, I like the title, but also I very much like the subtitle because, I think visualizing the city is such an important idea. And we're doing this conversation at a rather critical time for a lot of our cities, particularly in the West, I think, which is around the fact that we've got massive growth going on in a place like Sydney. But there is, in my phrase, there is no social license to grow the city at this point in time. It's kind of a controversial thing that people are going through. They don't seem to like change as much as we would like them to.
Mm-hmm.
It's coming anyway. Can we shape it?
Absolutely.
And I think one of the things that comes out of it for me is that their experience of change is not all been good. So one of the challenges is to actually show what good change looks like.
Right.
See. So I'm quite interested in this idea of seeing the better city.
Right.
So you've got a lot of sort of approaches to this. So I mean, where did you start?
I mean, I start with a notion of, in the preface, outlining a fundamental principle in keeping with what you've just said, and that is, the city is not solely an objective hardscape reality.
Right.
It is a deeply ingrained perception on the part of all of us. And we all can see. We have the same five visual senses since Aristotle, to my knowledge, with the visual arguably being the most important. And to my mind, after years in the trenches as a lawyer dealing with this this stuff and being the son of a planning and urban design professor, I through a mixture of osmosis and warfare, I came to the realization that there's some very simple precepts that guide what's going on today and that we need to do a bit of deconstruction. Where I start is with the camera and a forced immersion through the use of a camera. And by camera, I certainly mean today's smartphones, because we're doing it anyway. Everybody's out on Instagram with selfies and their favorite travel photos, and oftentimes their opinions of whether they know it or not of what they're experiencing.
Yeah.
So one reviewer put it very well, and I was very flattered by this summary of the convergence. He basically said, we're able to immediately use the visual through personal technology like never before, at the same time that cities are upon us and are increasingly the habitat of humans, and that Chuck is trying to marry the two of them. And I thought that was a very apt characterization. Basically, I have introduction that's very similar to your summary with stories using Seattle, my hometown, as a foil, because Seattle's the fastest growing city in the United
States. Well, we didn't know that when we were doing research for this. I was surprised at that. But
Amazon.
Yeah.
And then I embark on a history of observation techniques, both two-dimensional, three-dimensional, and moving into the digital and today's world. And then I have two chapters on how to see and how to marry the personal with city policy plan and process, and conclude with that notion that we could do a better job doing that.
Well, I was going to come to that. Yeah. What do you think the advice for professionals is that comes out of this work? Because I think it's a really big challenge, because I think part of the problem that we are experiencing in Sydney around, a lack of consensus around, or support for, really, growth, is that some of the traditional ways we've done planning and the ways in which we've done architecture, we all need to change our game a bit, I think, to kind of get up to speed with what the technology allows us to do, but also the experiences that people have through this technology. We're not on the same page at the moment with the users of the city.
Right.
We're using 19th and 20th century approaches, really. So what's the advice that comes out of this for professionals?
I go back to the fundamental precept: we all see. And we all see from different perspectives. Yeah. I learned a few things from my father. One, photographs simulate the three-dimensional world in a very, although they're snapshots in time, they do provide this deconstruction opportunity. Two, we all see from different perspectives based on our sociocultural background and life experiences. Three, the written word is not enough. So I would ask professionals to remember that. I would ask professionals, to the best of their ability within the allowances of their clients, to honor the need of people, especially in the United States in these times, to have an ownership interest in what's changing around them. This book is both empowering for the ordinary resident and also instructional for the professional. But I do believe, to your point, the professional needs to honor the fact that we are not entirely blessed just because we were taught in planning school, architecture school, law school, or whatever to interpret this in a professional way.
No, I like that a lot because so my own background is very different. I come from a sort of social history background, my own academic background, but that had its moment, which is very relevant to this, which is around saying it isn't the history of society isn't just about an elite history of societies, but how is it experienced from below. And partly of what you're talking about, I think, is how the city's experienced by people who live there and the tools that they use to understand what's going on.
Right, and I also borrow, there's a lot of Australia in this book, and I also borrow from indigenous ways of understanding place, both here and from Native Americans in the United States. I talk about experiences that I had as a lawyer in consultations with tribes in and around projects and whatnot. I talk about a tremendous book that you may be aware of here in Sydney by Gail Jones called Five Bells, about the essentially not only the psychohistory of five different individuals with entirely different life experiences, but how a deep dive into Sydney's history and vertical stratigraphy informs their perception of place. There's all these inadvertent keys. And so I'm really arguing in a very humanistic way. Yeah. Okay, but that's not enough. I'm not, art, science, or both. I'm trying to turn it into a pragmatic outcome.
Yeah, because what comes through the book is that you are both, a lawyer and a planner. But there is an empathy in the book about, people who are not either of those things. And I think that's quite critical at this point, where there is a danger of the professionals talking to themselves a lot about the growth of the city, but finding no common language, visual or otherwise, with people's actual experience of the city. And I have to say, I have a great deal of sympathy with people's anxiety about the changing city. I want to talk about place. You mentioned the word place, right?
Okay.
People, in a sense, don't live in anything quite as abstract as a city. Sometimes they do when they think of the city mayor and the big city discussions, but other times they live in a suburb, or they live in a urban village, they live in a place, right?
Right.
I think the good thing is happening in Sydney at the moment. is that over the last couple of years, there's been a rediscovery by professionals in the private public sector of the idea that place is what matters to people, not a housing, mm-hmm. not something called even the built environment, you know, mm-hmm. but actually places is where people live. And if we can't build great places in the new city, they don't want the new city.
Right.
So the quality of place is yeah. a hugely important issue.
And it's what resonates with a variety of interest groups and yeah. so on and so forth. I want to be careful with that term because okay. it's become captured by so many, and everybody wants to be a placemaker now.
I get that.
And
but the opposite is worse, you see.
Yes, it is. And what we, I think, have to be careful about is, just as with design professionals, as much as placemakers may speak to yeah. their bottom-up approach, sometimes the placemaking movement is undeniably formalistic in how it activates a particular locus, whatever. I say to my colleagues in the placemaking movement oftentimes that they need to be contextual. Everyone needs to be more contextual. I'm still answering your earlier yeah, question of professionals.
Yeah.
Context is so important. And I have several examples in yeah. the book yeah. of where individuals who knew better about the specific nature of a place were able to insert some corrective paths into decision making that just might avoid a gentrification outcome
yeah.
because the place was about to be anywhere because of formulaic or formalistic applications.
Yeah, there's a great danger. The reason why I said the opposite is worse is because
yeah.
the greatest danger, I think, in Sydney today is a very simplistic one-size-fits-all model of modern right. city growth, and people object to that. And it pays no respect, I think, is the point, to either the nature of place or the community, you know, experience of what a great place looks like. So I think, for me, that abstraction is actually the greatest danger, and professionals need to sort of reflect very much, mm-hmm. I think, on how else to do that. And I agree with you. I also think placemaking is these phrases, they just become easily absorbed into the culture and then
yeah.
regurgitated. No doubt at presentations by prize-winning architects, but essentially, there is a depth. There is a depth to the word place, I think, which is not the same as the idea of the built environment. I reject the built environment. I quite like a place. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
So, yeah, yeah.
But in terms of your visit here,
yes.
We're as I've suggested, Sydney will grow to a city of 8 million by 2050, 55. Mm-hmm. Same size as London now.
Mm-hmm.
So shocker in many respects, because we don't feel prepared for some of that growth.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought the reason why it was great to see you here is because I think that what you add to this discussion, and I think it's unique, by the way, is this sort of feel that mm-hmm. that people are addressing real issues, and that actually there are certain tools that, sort of, if you like, ordinary people,
mm-hmm.
bad phrase, have, which we must use and learn from, you know, that their experiences
right.
are as valid. And actually, you won't get anywhere unless you respect those experiences.
Right, right, so. Right. Well, no, I appreciate that. And I've been in the midst of several engagement in several Australian cities, and I'm finding a remarkable dialogue here. I think people are really interested, arguably more so than in the United States.
Explain that remark, because we sometimes yeah. think the other is not just the case.
I think in the United States right now, the political reality is, at least in the part of the country I'm in, which is so different than other parts of the country, people are more focused on the individual issues associated with urban life. For instance, people tend to get one track on affordability, or one track on climate change, or one track on equity or environmental justice, or one track on crime prevention, and it's hard to find people in my experience who are thinking about all of the above in an intertwined way, because the city is all of that. So my own personal experience is that we are too single issue. Right now, in the issue is all about affordable housing.
Yeah.
And not that that's not an issue here, but...
Sure. But you think we have a slightly more integrated discussion?
Yes. And I'm saying that by experience and the questions I've been asked everywhere from Melbourne, Adelaide, Canberra, Perth, and here earlier today. I think it could be something to do with governmental structure here and some of the nuances of state versus local control.
Well, we're going through something in Sydney, which is an experiment which other Australian cities are looking at, which is that we've now got this thing called the Greater Sydney Commission.
Right.
And it's an attempt at a metropolitan coordination of transport, land use, education planning.
Yeah.
We've never had before. And it's new, it's 18 months old.
Right.
We all think that it's had a bit of an impact on bringing some of the silos together.
Yeah, and I mean, I saw a bit of that too with the ACT government in Canberra because they're one and the same. I would say there may be another issue in Australia, and I talk about this with my wife a lot, who's also, she's got dual citizenship. Yeah. She partially grew up in Melbourne. But the compulsory voting, even though it's not there for all levels, all elections, I think might drive a more compelling awareness of issues. I may be wrong about that, but we seem to find that people maybe are a little more informed or interested in keeping tabs because, at least for many of the elections, they have to.
Yeah. What is interesting, as an aside, I think maybe half the American people didn't vote in the recent presidential election.
Right.
So I come from a British background. We don't have compulsory voting either. But so I agree that it forces a kind of civic discussion about the issues. Our problem, of course, in Australia is we don't have big city government. We have small local governments that are actually good because they're small and that they relate to people locally, but bad because they're small, but they don't have much power to shape the city.
Yeah, I did a workshop in Adelaide almost 2 weeks ago, and we spent, as part of a two-hour workshop, we spent probably 25, 30 minutes staring at a building that was there because of state decision-making adjacent to the central market. And there were all sorts of discussions about, in the book I talk a lot about juxtapositions and that being where the battles are and really to look for them.
Well, it's true. But it's a really interesting point because this juxtaposition, the one you talk about, was created by different tiers of government.
Exactly. And
that's fascinating. And
you'll see in the presentation tonight that it will be there.
So one last question. What we like to do, and you've been very gracious about this, is that we like to get our international speakers, of which we've had a few this year, to do workshops with government. You did one with the planning department.
Yeah, planning and environment in South Wales.
What did you find in that experience? What did you focus on for that?
I found it was actually a two-part workshop, about an hour with me doing an affirmative presentation, a longer version of what I'm going to do tonight, and then a smaller session where we really talked through issues. Yeah. And I thought it was great because in the second session, there was a lot of interest in applied tools and techniques. I think given the nature of the folks assembled, there were some people there trained also as lawyers and planners like I am. And they, it was quite a resonating discussion. And they, from what I'm seeing in emails that I'm getting since, they're really interested in trying some of these suggestions out. They're very interested in finding a way to engage that is, as I think you would put it, more of a 21st century technique.
Yeah. The book is great, and I think it's different. There's loads of books on about urban sort of thinking, but this is different because I think it's got a high-level analysis, but it also combined with a kind of very practical approach to ideas that have worked, things that you think make sense. Listening to people, it's essentially a respectful book about working with people and their culture in building the city. And I think that's almost the most important thing for me.
Yeah, I really appreciate you're saying that. I will tell you, I know we are trying to wrap it here, but one I think very important consideration is that I had a younger person in the United States be very fearful that I was empowering those who would say no to the types of change she would like to see.
Yeah.
And I asked her if she'd read the book. She hadn't.
No, of course.
And I think she went back and looked at it a little more closely and realized that I was being respectful for everyone and perhaps might even had a little bit of a taint in her direction.
I was going to say last sentence from me about this, but it plays to something that we have been clear about. You come to this city in the middle of a conversation. Last week, we had the two main newspapers in the city taking different approaches. On the one hand, mm-hmm. a survey by the Sydney Morning Herald saying people don't want to see growth next door to them. They want to export it to the fringe of the city, right. Number one. On the other side, we have the Telegraph saying to the Premier, you keep on, you know, developing the city.
Yeah.
And of course, the Committee of Sydney, as ever, being very balanced, came through the middle of this one, did a piece saying there's a difference between growth and bad growth, and that right. we need the only way in which we're going to win support for growth that's coming is to make it as good as possible.
Right.
And I think that's we would, I think, rather clumsily call it density done well.
Right.
But essentially, respecting why people haven't liked some of the development that they've seen, understanding what it is people want to see in their city,
mm-hmm.
And building on that, building them into the process of building the city much more than we've done before. And I think there's a lot in your approach, I think, which really resonates with us. So thank you very much for coming.
Thank you. I'm very pleased to hear that.
That's great.
Yeah.